Please rise. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Cochran, Judge Jessen, the Honorable Kevin Ross presiding.
Please be seated.
Good morning and welcome to this October 17 panel of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have we had four cases on our calendar this morning. One is postponed. We have three cases on our calendar today. The first is Walker versus State of Minnesota Department of Corrections. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel. If you'd like to use that time for rebuttal, please be mindful of our timing restrictions, which are indicated in the light and the clock in the lectern, which you can, hopefully you figured out already, you can raise or lower it for to your height for your convenience. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument, because we do keep an audio recording of the proceedings today. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you may.
May it please the court, my name is Jordan Kushner and I represent the appellant Michael Walker. Let me just start by apologizing for the delay. I was up in courtroom 200. I just gotten a notice of oral argument yesterday in another case, and 200 stuck in my mind, and I blanked out. Sorry about that. I hope that if the case being canceled, I didn't waste the, I don't know if you were ready to hear me at 10, hear the case at 10, and I wasn't here, but.
Well, of all the reasons to be in late, that's certainly the best one. You weren't really late. We're just in the wrong place.
Okay, all right.
That's fine.
Okay. Mr. Walker is a prisoner, lifetime prisoner who was severely injured from a slip and fall in the at Stillwater Prison when the prison failed to provide the notice that's required under their procedures of a wet floor. The district court severely erred because they dismissed the case over dispute about the amount of damages. There wasn't any dispute in the record to support the elements of negligence. The only dispute was how much Mr. Walker was injured, which is an issue for trial.
Wasn't causation, I understood causation to be a significant issue as well.
There's no dispute that Mr. Walker was hurt, and the expert that the defendant relied on totally to trying to fruit causation agreed that Mr. Walker was injured, that he'd suffered contusions, and that he was back to, according to the expert, he was back to normal after 4 weeks. So even based on their own expert's opinion, the injury caused, there was causation. Mr. Walker suffered an injury caused by the accident that, resulted in injury and pain for at least 4 weeks.
So, as I understood it, the question was what before the district court was whether there needed to be expert testimony to support that causation argument that you just addressed, right?
Well, and then even the defendant's expert to support causation, but yeah.
So, are you here relying upon the defendant's expert to support causation?
No, I'm not, because the defendant expert was wrong, and there's evidence to support a conclusion that the injury was substantially worse than what the expert said.
But I'm sorry.
I think that the expert requirement here has been blown way out of proportion from what it's been in the past and what it should be.
Doesn't case law establish that expert testimony on causation is required when a case involves obscure and obtuse medical factors?
That's what the case law says. And I think
in this case, there was, I think the record reflects medical records showing a variety of diagnoses which involve complex medical terms and diagnoses, and also I believe that Mr. Walker had prior back issues, chronic back pain. So given you know, the record in terms of the medical situation, how did the district court err in concluding that that presented, you know, an obscure and obtruse medical situation testimony was required?
There could be aspects of the claim that could be considered obscure and obtruse. You know, the district court didn't get to the details, but what's clear is that Mr. Walker fell. He suffered severe pain, required continued medical attention, and whether or not he caused the whether or not it caused the injuries that required multiple surgeries, I think is an issue of fact, and the court might have to resolve a trial whether there's sufficient evidence. But we produced medical records combined with Mr. Walker's own testimony, which established a chain of causation. He explained in his testimony by affidavit. And I know, just in terms of, just to show how unfair the district court was in the oral argument that described Mr. Walker's affidavit as self-serving testimony. Well, obviously, someone who's going to provide testimony on their own behalf is going to support their point of view. But
I'm trying to.
The defendants didn't take Mr. Walker's deposition, so sure, that was their choice.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but I'm trying to understand how, assuming that you are correct, that you can rely upon, or there's a basis to rely upon, the state's expert for causation. I'm wondering how your client could receive a trial on any injury beyond the contusions and the 4 weeks of injury. Beyond that, I'm trying to figure out why any claim beyond that isn't cut off by lack of expert testimony.
Well, I mean, that is a baseline, and the expert describes it as contusions, but Mr. Walker explains severe pain where he wasn't able to walk, and then suffered constant numbness. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
There is real injury there that we can go to trial over, and I think
no, I understand, but the injury. Medical. But my question though is, because of the 1998, 2012, 2015. Evidence of pre-existing serious back issues. It seems to me, at least, the district court was probably right as to needing an expert for causation, because it's not something that lay testimony can establish beyond the what you've just described. If you're right, even about that,
Judge, I think that's incorrect, because you have to parse out the specific facts. And Mr. Walker didn't suffer the same injury that he had suffered before. There was documentation of a prior lower back injury, and Mr. Walker's ultimately surgery was in his middle back. He explained that he suffered pain from his neck to his tailbone. So this was not the same injury that he had, that it was clearly a different injury than he had had previously.
As I understand it, just a couple of months before this fall, your client was diagnosed with degenerative joint disease and end-stage, problems with his knees.
Right.
You know, I find it hard to figure out how a layperson's going to say, well, was that part of the cause for the fall, as opposed to the lack of warning or the wet floors, without an expert testimony. Can you help me with that?
Again, there's different symptoms that different serious symptoms that Mr. Walker described, most of which he didn't have in connection with any of the prior injuries. He explained that he was mobile before, he played sports. After this accident, he was basically in a walker, sometimes a wheelchair. So he had.
Right, but if he had degenerative joint disease of his spine, I'm trying to get a sense. You may be correct in what you're saying, that the cause may be there, but I'm trying to understand how a layperson, that your client's own testimony would be enough to establish causation on such an obscure medical issue as the difference between whether the degenerative joint disease back a year earlier, in fact, continued to degenerate. I mean, if it's degenerative, it's continuous, as I understand it. And I think you need an expert to to explain otherwise. Explain why I'm wrong about that.
I think we might need an expert to explain the degree of injury, and the plan would be to try and get Mr. Walker's treating physicians to testify at trial. Unfortunately, the surgeon that he had was left Minnesota, and we couldn't get a hold of him, and that's kind of why we were stuck. But if we have a trial scheduled, we'll work on.
But as to causation, why is his testimony sufficient to show causation in light of the degenerative joint disease?
His testimony is, for summary judgment purposes, his testimony is sufficient to show causation of some injuries. Maybe not. We might not have established, that we might not have proved by a preponderance of the evidence all of the injuries that he suffered, that he claims were because of the accident. But we provided some evidence so that if the jury just took his testimony as it came, it could reasonably reach that conclusion. And obviously, the reason for a trial is to test it and hear both sides and then present the full evidence, and then the jury can decide the degree to which his injuries were caused by the accident. And even based on the undisputed evidence, some injuries were caused by the accident, and how much were is an issue for trial.
And specifically, what evidence are you relying on to say that there is sufficient evidence of causation? Is it his affidavit alone, or are you relying on the state's medical expert too?
It's both, either or, individually or in combination. So Mr. Walker's affidavit provides a clear chain of causation. If you believe him, he didn't have any of these symptoms prior to the accident, and after the accident he had the symptoms.
Where does he say he didn't have any of these symptoms prior to the accident?
His affidavit explains all the different kinds of pain and numbness and immobility that he suffered right after the accident, which he didn't have beforehand.
Maybe I'm missing it. I mean, I have the affidavit right here, and I've read it. I'm not sure where I see that he says he didn't have those symptoms before the fall.
Okay, well, I can pull up the affidavit here.
I mean, you can address it on rebuttal.
Yeah, I mean, he claimed that, he said that the pain he had, most of the pain he had was not pain that he had beforehand.
And what paragraph is that?
The immobility was not what he had beforehand.
Maybe I'm just not remembering it, but.
I think it might require, I mean, I don't know that he's, I think you have to look at the whole of the affidavit, which supports that conclusion. But
you can try to find that during the break and come back to it on rebuttal.
So Dr. Davis is incorrect. Paragraph 21, Dr. Davis is incorrect in stating that he only suffered lower back pain after the slip and fall. I also had pain down to my tailbone and up to my neck. The surgery in January 2017 was for my middle back, so I think the inference from that is that this is pain that he only suffered after the accident.
So is there something in the affidavit or in the state's evidence from the state's examiner that would establish that, or that tend to prove that the injury was not caused by degenerative joint disease of the spine?
The expert says that he suffered, he suffered injury that he recovered from in 4 weeks.
I mean, beyond the 4 weeks, that's what I was originally asking you about.
I think a jury could make a reasonable inference based on Mr. Walker's discussion of what his symptoms were before and after the accident that this was caused by the accident in question.
Okay.
If I could go back to a preliminary issue, and maybe both of you could address this for me. You talked about getting at that issue of when do we need an expert on causation, and that's as opposed to what lay people can understand. And the district court, as you are, talking about, is it an obscure and obtruse medical factor? So I was just looking at this Rigel versus ACR Holmes decision from earlier this year from the Supreme Court. And addressing this issue, they say, if a layperson could not reasonably understand and make inferences concerning the connection between the breach of duty and the injury, then there's got to be expert testimony. Okay. So do you see that as a different standard, a newer standard, and the one that you all are talking about and the district court relied upon here, or you think they're the same?
And we didn't analyze the case, but it sounds consistent with what we're talking about, and maybe there's some difference that we need to parse out. But, you know, Mr. Walker clearly fell on his back and needed medical attention, and so I just don't think that's obscure and abstruse. There might be certain aspects of the injury that we might not be able to prove at trial. So I think a judge could say, well, you're going to have a challenge at trial to prove this. But we've gotten through the gate because we've shown that he suffered injury and that someone could reasonably, even their own expert, reasonably concluded that some of the injury was caused by the accident. So the causation of some injury is there. And I've never heard of the amount of injury being decided on summary judgment. The amount of injury is an issue for trial, and that's something that, you know, there might be a point where the judge will say, well, we're not going to, you can introduce evidence of what happened up to 4 weeks and, you know, the pain that you had there, but there's nothing more. I think that would be an unreasonable decision, but it's possible that the judge could decide that, in which case, you know, that's the injury we'd be able to argue, but that's a trial issue. It's not for the, it's not something to be decided on summary judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Cushing. Your time has expired. You will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Madeline DeMel, and I am an assistant attorney general appearing today on behalf of respondent, Minnesota Department of Corrections. This appeal boils down to a single issue: whether Mr. Walker, an individual with an exceedingly complex medical history, can meet his burden of proof on the causation element of his negligence claim. Mr. Walker cannot, so the district court properly granted summary judgment, and this panel should affirm. There are two primary issues for the court to consider. The first being the causation of element in the element of causation in negligence claims, and when proof of the same requires positive expert testimony.
Let's assume we agree that positive expert testimony is necessary. Why wouldn't we conclude that at least up to 4 weeks was covered by the state's own expert? That is, the injuries that occurred not extending beyond that to the surgeries and so forth. But why isn't the state's expert enough to establish that there was pain, there was an injury, compensable damages resulted from the fall itself, without more?
The state's expert is not enough because of plaintiff's burden of proof. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. Of course, as plaintiff, it is Mr. Walker's burden of proof on each of the elements of his claim. And when it comes to causation, no matter what portion of the alleged injuries Mr. Walker is attempting to prove, Mr. Walker is not going to be writing on a blank slate. And that is because of the, again, exceedingly complex medical history that he has.
Right, but even with that medical history, your expert indicated that there was an injury that resulted from the fall. There was pain, there was reasonable care as a result of the fall itself for the first, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. I forgot exactly the period. So you're saying, if I understand you correctly, when you say, well, it's the plaintiff's burden, you're saying as a matter of law, the plaintiff cannot rely upon evidence that was introduced into the proceeding by the state?
Your Honor, it's not just that it's the plaintiff's burden. I think here, given the particular facts at issue in the record, that the expert's testimony is not going to be enough for Mr. Walker on that issue.
Well, let's talk about that second. But first, is it your position that a plaintiff cannot rely upon a defendant's expert's opinion?
Your Honor, no, I don't think so. And if the court has concerns,
no, that's not your position, or no, that the plaintiff cannot rely upon the expert of the defendant.
I apologize. No, that is not respondent's position as a matter of law.
All right, thank you.
Plaintiff can, of course, in opposing a motion for summary judgment, identify specific facts in the record. This expert report is certainly in the record.
So your argument goes to substance. You're saying that the expert's opinion doesn't support any injury or causation.
That's correct.
Explore that with me. I mean, how is that so?
Yes, Your Honor. I will admit, out of candor with the court, this bruise, the contusion, that 4-week period, that's tricky. It's not as clear as some of the other injuries that Mr. Walker alleges, and that's where we sort of get into this question of line drawing.
Well, let's talk about the contusions then. Was the district court right in dismissing the claim as to that particular injury that was cited by your expert?
Our position is yes, the district court was correct. However, if this is something the court has concerns about.
Why though? Why?
The district court was correct because causation here is going to involve so much in the way of factual determination about Mr. Walker's physical condition at the time of this fall that whether or not falling causes a contusion, there's still a need to understand whether or not Mr. Walker fell because of conduct by the defendant. And it could be the case that his prior medical conditions, issues with knees, stability, walking, all of that could have contributed to the fall. And it is Mr. Walker's burden to establish that it was not any of those pre-existing issues, which would require reference to his medical history, to those records.
So your argument, so if I understand you correctly, you believe causation is necessary not just for the injuries, but causing what caused the fall? You're saying you need an expert to testify that it was the wet floor that caused him to slip and that his testimony is not sufficient for that?
I don't know that an expert is needed for the question about the wet floor, but I do think that it is just simply difficult to disentangle his prior history and how that manifested in his physical condition at the time of the fall. And
well, that seems to be a part less medically intertwined that a plaintiff, why wouldn't a plaintiff be able to say, why wouldn't it be sufficient for a plaintiff to offer evidence of causation for the fall? To say, yeah, I've got this degenerative back issue, but I don't just fall down all the time. I mean, it's a rare thing that I would fall. No question that the floor was wet. The floor had just been mopped. I stepped on the floor. I slipped. I fell. That didn't seem to be much in dispute. But your position is that you need an expert to show, that's a medical expert to show causation for the fall. Am I correct? That's your argument?
That is not our argument as to all cases. We are not asking for a
problem. No, as to this case.
As to this case. I think our argument here is that these particular facts, this particular plaintiff, this particular record, what we do know is that the medical history is lengthy, complex, and really intertwined with the nature of the alleged negligence and the injuries that Mr. Walker is now claiming.
If you're wrong about that, if we conclude that you don't need, that Mr. Walker does not need a medical expert to establish the cause of the fall, only the causation of the injuries, assuming that's the case, why wouldn't your expert be sufficient to establish the injury of contusions were caused by the fall?
In that case, Your Honor, I do believe our expert's testimony would then be sufficient, and any remand would be appropriate as to that narrow 4-week period and the contusion only. But nothing more than that would be appropriate to remand to the district court, because I don't think there is a reasonable question that everything beyond this four-week period, whatever is alleged to have happened there, is something that a lay jury could be expected to understand.
So was this issue of, oh, it should only be for the four-week period, we have enough for the four-week period, was that addressed before the district court? Was that argument made and responded to?
Your Honor,
I just don't recall seeing it, but you know the record better than I do.
Your Honor, I don't believe it was addressed before the district court.
I do have another question for you. Maybe I don't believe you cited this case, so if you're not familiar with it, I understand. But I was looking at the versus St. Louis County case from the Minnesota Supreme Court in 2000. And that was a case where a resident of a nursing home and who had doctor's orders saying you got to be in restraints, right? Wasn't in a restraint, okay, so he got the breach, right? And the individual fell and had injuries. And so looking at, the Supreme Court said, look, there's no dispute that the fall was the direct and proximate cause of the injury. But here comes the part I'm going to ask you about. That such a fall was the direct and proximate result of the staff's breach of the standard of care is also within the general knowledge and experience of a lay person. It's a matter of common knowledge and experience that an elderly person confused and recovering from a fractured hip, who's left unattended, would likely fall, and that would result in the types of injuries he sustained. We don't need an expert. So why is this case different than that case where it's like, okay, there was no restraints as opposed to there's a wet floor without a warning sign, but why should we need an expert?
Your Honor, listening to the description of the case, which I will say I'm not familiar with off the top of my head, but I appreciate the review of facts. I think the important principle that can be extracted from the cases we've cited, and it sounds cases like that, is that causation just can't be evaluated in a vacuum, and that we look at who is the plaintiff involved, what were the circumstances prior to the alleged breach, injury, all the rest. And here we have a set of circumstances that are simply going to necessitate complex questions of causation in almost every, if not every, circumstance of the causation analysis. And I think the Whitwer case that we cited in our brief is helpful. It's from 2007, and it's about an individual who was making claims for emotional distress damages, and the Court of Appeals reversed on the basis that that individual had suffered from or had been in an emotionally vulnerable state for the 2 years prior to the incident at question. And so the court in that case recognized that it was not writing on a blank slate, that plaintiff was not writing on a blank slate when it came to causation. There had to be some sort of accounting for who was this plaintiff prior to the incident, what sort of circumstances were they experiencing, and how does that intersect with both the moment of injury and then the claims of injury thereafter. And I think
go ahead. Sorry, I thought you were done.
I was just going to say, I think a case like that is instructive here.
So, relatedly, appellant argues that Mr. Walker's affidavit suggests that he didn't have a number of these physical conditions were first experienced after the fall. So why isn't that, in your view, sufficient to create for the jury to be able, for it to be sort of a common sense situation that the jury can discern on its own where a medical expert is not required?
Your Honor, it's not sufficient for two reasons. First, Mr. Walker is not a physician. He says so in paragraph 4 of that same affidavit. And second, as a matter of law, listing symptoms is simply not equivalent to explaining causation. Whitwer, again, is actually a good citation for that proposition. And I would also point the court to Anderson, and that's the case about individuals who were exposed to exhaust fumes from a Zamboni and experienced respiratory injuries afterwards, the district court in that case, which the Court of Appeals affirmed, rejected the plaintiff's argument that their experts were sufficient because their experts didn't tether their claims of injury to any sort of specific symptoms, to any particular facts about their prior medical histories. Some of those plaintiffs, for instance, had a history of smoking, asthma, things like that. And so that tells us that simply saying, here's a symptom I had 10 years ago and here's a symptom I had today, is not always the same as proving what caused a current symptom against the backdrop of any pre-existing conditions or symptoms that might have been present.
Thank you.
The other note I will make about the evidence that Mr. Walker could point to beyond the affidavit is that Mr. Walker did below, I believe, point to a disclosure of expert witnesses, but those are not going to be sufficient for Mr. Walker to carry his burden of proof here. They're essentially a list of treating physicians, and because of that, they were not properly disclosed if they want to offer opinion testimony about the causation issue. Rule 2601B3 would require a summary of any opinions to which those witnesses would opine, and that was not included below. So even if some of those treating physicians might be viewed as a possibility, the disclosure was inappropriate and didn't happen, and therefore is not available as an option. All told, this comes back to the causation element and plaintiff's burden of proof on that element. The nature of Mr. Walker's medical history, its length back to 1986, almost four decades, on my count, over 3,000 pages of medical records produced during discovery, that's a history that is just too complex to hand those records to a jury and expect them to connect the proverbial dots and reach a non-speculative conclusion about causation here. For that reason, respondents would respectfully ask that this panel affirm the district court. Thank you. Unless there are any further questions.
There don't appear to be any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilor Pellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you. First, let me make clear that this argument or issue that there was no dispute that Mr. Walker suffered some injuries, that even their expert acknowledged that it took him 30 days to recover, that was raised at the district court. It was a distinct argument in my memorandum in opposition.
If you could, Mr. Kushner, if you could move a little closer to the microphone so we can pick you up on the audio.
Can I repeat myself there?
I think we're good.
Okay. So that was a specific, distinct argument in my memorandum in opposition to summary judgment. It was also an argument I made specifically at the oral argument, which is, you know, that transcript was provided to the court. So it was raised, and I don't believe it was ever responded to. I believe it was ignored. I think, frankly, the district court wanted to dispose of this prisoner claim and didn't decide not to examine. I think if you look at the oral argument, the district judge had made up her mind before I even started to argue. She made her position clear and, frankly, just wasn't listening, and so I'm glad that we have an attentive court at this time. An issue that was not raised was this claim now that Mr. Walker slipped and fell not because of the wet floor, but because of some degenerative condition. Their experts certainly didn't present any such argument. That argument was never made anywhere before the district court, and so it's not something that could be raised here, and of course that would be an issue for trial anyway. Now, Mr. Walker did present specific testimony in his affidavit that he didn't have injuries before, and so I know I was asked to look over break, so paragraph 23 talks about how he was, prior to December 16, 2016, he wasn't seriously debilitated by any injury, and he talks about all the activities he couldn't do before that he can't do now, and then in paragraph 24, he says he didn't have problems with his tailbone, back, and neck, and did not experience numbness throughout his lower body and did not have problems with constipation or incontinence. So he does, and throughout the affidavit, I think it's pretty clear that he's listing a lot of symptoms he had right after the fall, where he suffered pain and numbness that got progressively worse after the fall. That didn't happen before. And I think the Supreme Court case that Judge Jensen cited about that you can make a rational conclusion that there certain accidents can cause certain injuries, I think that is instructive. And I think that the cases that were cited, like Anderson and Whitwer, which involved injuries from emotional distress or from exhaust, I mean, those are obviously more obscure than falling on your back and then as a result having back pain issues. This was for trial. So I think the appropriate decision here is we did make a showing of causation, that there was causation of injury, and the amount of injury that was caused is an issue for trial. It's not something to decide on summary. It's not something to be decided on summary judgment. It's possible we have a right to present trial on the injuries. It's possible that when we go to trial, the trial court can say, well, you didn't submit enough evidence of this specific injury, so we're not going to allow the, I'm going to instruct the jury that you didn't have enough evidence of this specific injury. I think that's something that the district court needs to decide based on the evidence that's presented at trial, which would be Mr. Walker's testimony, would hopefully be some of his treating physicians. And I think in the medical records, when you look at his surgery, it notes as his medical history, you know, the slip and fall that he had before, and, you know, that happened about a month or so before the DOC finally got Mr. Walker to the hospital. So, you know, part of the problem is that they're benefiting here from their own delays, where they didn't take Mr. Walker to get to an expert until he had another fall, more than a month and a half later. So they're basically trying to benefit from them not giving him sufficient medical attention. So they actually ended up delaying the treatment that he needed and caused him to get hurt worse. And then after that, they transfer him to Oregon. And so he's, you know, obviously more debilitated from being able to pursue his claims because he's in prison from Oregon. So we have he's entitled to his day in court and to see what evidence he can get together and determine what that's able to prove. And I think someone can infer from the medical records, you know, a causation between the medical records and Mr. Walker's testimony, they can infer causation, and it is our burden at trial to show the extent of the injuries. It's not our burden to disprove every different kind of explanation on summary judgment, and that's what was done here, and that was incorrect. So we respectfully ask that the district court be reversed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kushner, Ms. DeMille. We appreciate your argument today and your briefing. The matter is submitted. We'll issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you very much, and have a good afternoon.
You too.